This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Welcome to the Trumpet's weekly review of all the important news. I'm Joel Hilliker, and with me is our panel. Here in the studio, we have Jeremiah Jacques.
Hello there.
And Andrew Miller.
Hello.
From our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Nachtigall.
Greetings.
This has been a very dark week for America. By all appearances, the radical left is having victory upon victory. There's a legitimate fear that now getting its grip on the presidency and both the House and the Senate, both houses of Congress, that it will have unlimited power to enact its agenda that will transform America into a different country entirely. I want to remind you of some statements our editor-in-chief made 14 years ago about the danger America faces. These statements have really been coming to mind as the nation stands on the brink of a Biden presidency and all that that would entail. In the 2006 midterm elections, Democrats made virtually a clean sweep in gaining control of Congress. And this is what our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, said. I believe the 2006 midterm elections changed American politics forever. You don't need a deep biblical understanding to realize that something is dreadfully wrong in this country. America is being cursed. Times have never been more dangerous for America. We face wars on multiple fronts. Do you think a government dominated by anti-war politicians can save America from its enemies? And then he said, the election of the Democrats, I believe, reveals the desperate lack of will in our people. This election sent a message to terrorists just as surely as Chamberlain sent a message to Hitler when he traveled to Munich before World War II and accepted a paper promise of peace in our time. Just think about the message America is sending to the rest of the world right now. With all this this evidence of election fraud, virtually the entire press, the entire political establishment going along with that, and now what looks to be a return to the politics of Barack Obama, this time on steroids. It's quite a message. Mr. Flory wrote, "Now extreme liberals dominate our government. Time will prove this to be a deadly curse on the United States." Now, again, he wrote that 14 years ago, and really all of these statements are easily 4 or 5 or 10 times more relevant than when he wrote them. God is giving America a good, hard look at just what this nation would become if this radical force truly got its hands on all the levers of power in this country. And unless God intervenes, that is exactly what is going to happen. We have to face that reality squarely. We're staring it right in the face. And what would that mean? How big of a curse on this country would that be? Just look at what this party that is gaining control has come to represent, even much more than it did 14 years ago. Just think about all the authoritarian measures that our leaders took because of coronavirus. That all happened overnight. Think about the restrictions on free speech. Think about what big tech companies are doing. Think of the restrictions on freedom of religion. Think of enforced radical gender and transgender policies. Think about leaders telling law enforcement to stand down as cities burned in the name of racial justice. Think about open borders, more immigration, destructive economic policies aimed at combating climate change, partial birth abortion, so many other social issues. And think about the changes in foreign policy with a man named Biden in office. And what would be his policy toward China? How would he deal with Iran? In that 2007 article, Gerald Flory even talked about how the Ayatollah Khomeini called that midterm election a victory for Iran. We have a story on today's program about how Iran is using America's political turmoil as an opportunity to make a break for a nuclear weapon. Again, Mr. Fleury made these statements 14 years ago. This was when Nancy Pelosi came to power. He wrote, "Democrats are excited by the fact that endorsements of San Francisco values now echo through Washington's halls." And now Speaker Pelosi's House wants to eliminate all language acknowledging biological differences between male and female. These things are happening. Mr. Fleury wrote, "God is cursing America for its rank vileness by taking away quality leadership. The leaders sweeping into power today are the opposite of the God-fearing leaders that made this nation great. Their widely touted vile values and beliefs are blatantly anti-God." He wrote, "America is laden or worn down with sin, and this has provoked God to anger." And he wrote about God breaking the pride of our power, and he said, "When the American people handed anti-war Democrats control of Congress, they revealed their unwillingness to stand in the face of adversity. They exposed a massive deficit of willpower and determination." And, you know, what's interesting is he wrote that about what was presumably a fair election. Here we're talking about these people taking power through what, by all appearances, there's so much evidence to show is nefarious activity and illegal activity. And there still is a lack of willpower and determination to do anything about that. I mean, we're seeing everything Mr. Fleury described 14 years ago on an unprecedented scale this week in America. As bad as those problems were 14 years ago, we're seeing something many times worse today. Just a phenomenal surrender to terrible evil. Now, God is allowing this to play out far more than I expected he would. And it's really forcing us to see just how far gone this nation is. Think about these warnings from Gerald Fleury. I mean, that article is hardly alone in the warnings that he has given and just saying this country is on its deathbed. Anyone who, say, read that all those years ago and thought it was hyperbole, they need to look at where America is today, January 8th, 2021. There has been only one thing preventing all of this from already playing out in this country, and that is that God was saving Israel temporarily by the hand of a modern-day Jeroboam. That is it. When Gerald Fleury said 4 years ago that if Hillary Clinton had won the election, it would have meant the end of our constitutional republic, if you thought that that was an exaggeration, look where we are today. Well, let's go ahead and get a rundown of this historic landmark week, the events that played out in America this past week. For this, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, big week in American politics this week, and it just keep getting bigger and bigger as the week went on. We started off with the Senate runoff in Georgia. I guess those who've been following that story will remember that back during the November 3rd election, there were two Senate seats up for grabs in Georgia. Both of them ended in like a three-way split where no one got enough to just win the election outright. So they did a runoff on Monday, which, well, surprisingly, or I guess probably not surprisingly, had some interesting results. The Democrats, the media is at least saying they won both seats, but there's definitely cause for some concern there. Our executive editor, Mr. Stephen Fleury, had a Trumpet brief go up this week titled "Georgia Senate Runoff Reveals America's Affliction," where he points to the fact that in at least one of these cases, like the radical Democrat, Raphael Warnock, received 1.6 million votes in November, while you had this moderate Republican who only received 1.2 million votes, and then this diehard Trump supporter received 1 million votes. So the diehard Trump supporter didn't make it to the runoff, obviously. But then the radical ended up winning. So it's like you eliminated the most conservative person right from the race, and instead of people switching their votes to the moderate candidate, they they switched their votes to this radical black liberation theology preacher who openly supports Jeremiah Wright and some characters even more extreme than him. So it's apparently...
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
there are no irregularities here.
Yeah, he's the most... Apparently this Jeremiah Wright supporting black liberation theology preacher is the most popular man in conservative Georgia.
Right.
But then as he brings out in that brief... The data integrity group already testified before Congress that there's at least 30,000 votes that have been digitally removed from Trump's total during the November 3rd election. There obviously hasn't been a time for the data experts to be going through the runoff election, but the Georgia state... websites do show that they are using the same Dominion voting systems, voting machines for this election that they lost during the November 3rd election. So if there was data irregularities due to the voting machines in November 3rd, it would be really weird if there wasn't data irregularities again.
Right.
It's the same people doing the work. And so... just that story would have made a big news week in America, but that was just coming in. That was just the start of the week, because we also on Wednesday had our big election certification. And I guess that's in America, the November 3rd is when people cast votes, but then the Electoral College meets on December 14th. And then so January 6th is when the Senate actually meets to officially count the Electoral College votes and certify it. And that ended up being a big mess, where the Congress convened in the middle of the afternoon. They counted off votes for Alaska. They counted off votes for Alabama. Arizona, that's the next one in the alphabet, came in and protested. But before they could break to debate the merits of the contestation, they had a group of several, it looked like six or seven from the pictures, protesters break into the Capitol building. And so with these protesters breaking into the Capitol building, they actually evacuated the Senate chamber just to make sure all the senators were safe, and didn't come back till that night. President Trump came out and told the crowd that the Republican Party is the party of law and order in America. All violence is unacceptable, and told everyone to go home. And so after everyone went home, they met again. Overruled Arizona's objection. Later in the evening, Pennsylvania also objected, and they overruled that objected. So at 3:44 in the morning, on Thursday, early Thursday morning, Mike Pence signed the certification alleging that Joe Biden is the next presidential elect of the United States. And our executive editor has another Trumpet brief titled President Trump is Exposing the Radical Left that goes through the details of that story. But he has a quote in here from President Trump he gave through a spokesman. This is said, even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election, and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition of power on January 20th. I have always said we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. And while this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again. And apparently that statement rattled a few people in that... Nancy Pelosi is saying that the Mike Pence needs to invoke the 25th Amendment to get him out of office now. They're saying if he won't, they need to impeach him now. Mark Zuckerberg has said that Trump is like banned for the foreseeable future from both Facebook and Instagram. Twitter banned him, but only for 12 hours. I think he's back on now. I think I saw a tweet from him last night, which... I guess people could take that as an encouraging sign, and that under normal circumstances, if you didn't cheat and everything's free and fair, you'd think this man has 12 days left in office. let him run out the clock in one of his left days. The fact that they're like, he can't tweet, he can't use Instagram, he can't use Facebook. We're trying to pressure Mike Pence to get him out of office now. If you don't get him out of office now, it's like maybe we need to impeach him now. It seems like a, it seems like someone with a guilty conscience to me. But
well, they're never timid about pushing every lever that they can to use to their advantage. When they see an opportunity, they will take it.
Yeah, they're definitely going to take it. Even President Trump at this point is saying that even though the election was rigged, it does look like Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated in 12 days. And that's the main point of Mr. Stephen Fleury's trumpet brief, is that everyone, it's just common knowledge now that Biden's going to be the next president. Mike Pence says that Biden's going to be the next president. Even Trump, who's one of the few people still fighting the election rigging, thinks that it looks most likely that Biden's going to be the next president. And yet, we still have our cover story from our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury, why Donald Trump will remain America's president, going through verses in Amos 7, 2 Kings 14, showing that there is going to be an end-time Jeroboam figure that saves America from the radical left. President Trump has not fulfilled all the prophecies that that Jeroboam figure is supposed to fulfill, so he has to stay in office. So the next 2 weeks are going to be really dramatic. I definitely, just the understatement of the program. But it's, maybe someone will beat me later on in this for the understatement of the program. But this trumpet brief, President Trump is exposing the radical left. Really, really interesting. It also goes through our personal history in the court case with the Worldwide Church of God. Just making the point where back then, this is like 18 years ago, where our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury, had said that after the we're fighting for the rights in this court case to Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong's greatest work, Mystery of the Ages, based on a prophecy in Habakkuk. Our editor-in-chief had said that, like, one way or another, we are going to get the rights to this book. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case. It was thrown out. We're going into a damages trial to figure out how much money do we owe for even trying to print this book. And then, like, just all of a sudden on January 16th, they came back and said, it's like, oh, well, even though we've been fighting you for 6 years saying it's our Christian duty to keep this book out of print, we'll just sell you the copyright under one condition, that you give up the documentation exposing some of the underhanded and corrupt techniques that we use to keep this book out of print.
Yeah.
I was about 17, I think, at the time, which when I heard that, like, well, that sounds like a good deal. Take the deal. And then our Mr. Fleury, he's like, no, we're not giving that up. That's no deal. We'll see you in court, which he's talking about a damages trial.
Right.
So it's not, he's not talking about, like, oh, we're going to, like, take this to the court case. Like, you've already been thrown out of the court case. You're going into a damages trial. But they came right back. They're like, all right, well, I guess we'll still sell it to you, and you can expose all the corruption. It makes absolutely no sense. But that's kind of that's basically the position that President Trump's finding himself in now. He's telling people that the fight to make America great again has just begun. And you're like, you're not even allowed on social media these days.
Well, we are deep into miracle territory. There is no question about that. You know, there are quite a few psalms written in the middle of serious trial, where the psalmist is just imploring God to intervene. And listening to the sanctimony and the self-righteousness of all these leftists who, you know, suddenly they're so concerned about the rule of law, and they brand anyone who protests as a terrorist. Listening to that, the language of these psalms is coming to mind just with fresh relevance. Psalm 94 says, "Lift up yourself, you judge of the earth. Render a reward to the proud. Eternal, how long shall the wicked, how long shall the wicked triumph? How long shall they utter and speak hard things, and all the workers of iniquity boast to themselves? How long is this going to go on? God is allowing it to go on to the point that it is absolutely clear nobody's going to save America out of this. Not Bill Barr, not Ted Cruz, not Rudy Giuliani, not Sidney Powell, not even Donald Trump. God is the only one who can turn this around. And by all appearances, things in America have never looked darker than they do right now. But as you said, you look at that church history that Stephen Fleury pointed to, and it really is when things look darkest that God has a history of delivering his greatest miracles. I do want to encourage all of our listeners to listen to The Trumpet Daily. This has definitely become required listening or required viewing. You can see the video that Stephen Fleury is producing every day. Just required viewing during these historic days. Stephen Fleury broadcasts that every morning at 7 a.m. on kpcg.fm. So do tune into that. And thank you very much for that, Andrew. Well, as all of this has been going on in America this week, what has Iran been up to? For this, we'll turn to Brent Noctegal.
Yes, it certainly was a good week for foreign powers to sneak their way around and get away with things that they might not get away with. Had the U.S. been able to be more occupied outside the country. However, with Iran, it's like some of these moves that they make, as they made this week, they tend to act this way anyway. And what we saw this past week was an increase in the severity of their nuclear weapons program. They announced on Monday that they had begun enriching uranium up to 20% purity. And once they get to 20%, then Iran will reduce their nuclear breakout time from 3 months down to 6 weeks. So this isn't a long time at all. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Agency, Ali Akbar Salahi, he said a day after that they're about to install 1,000 new centrifuges to help increase production of this. The IAEA then did inform the rest of the world that Iran isn't bluffing. They have, in fact, started enriching from 4.1% in enriched uranium now to 20%. And this is taking place underground, as Iran has said that they were going to do, which is very difficult for the United States or Israel to actually stop. They've begun this process of moving towards 20%. Now, this process of going from something like 3.5% or 4% as it's at right now to 20% is actually the most difficult part, the most time-consuming part of the technical process to produce enough enriched uranium, or weapons-grade uranium, for a nuclear weapon. So this is the threshold that Prime Minister Netanyahu gave, this 20% mark, which would necessitate an Israeli attack on Iranian nuclear facilities to stop them once they reach this 20% mark. So they're not there yet, but they are pushing towards this goal. This is something that has been approved by the parliament. This has been approved by the Guardian Council. Inside Iran, there was actually a law that was passed a couple of weeks ago following the death of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the nuclear scientist, the assassination of him, that they were going to enrich to 20% uranium. They were going to install these advanced centrifuges underground, and they were going to stop IAEA inspections. And they've done all that. And so while there's probably a lot of foreign powers right now doing things on the sly to try and escape the watchful eye of the United States while it's preoccupied, Iran is out there in the open pushing towards a nuclear weapon.
It's remarkable how many different arenas where you have these threats emerging. It's very clear just how dangerous the world is absent American leadership. And as America contemplates the onset of a Biden presidency, you see all kinds of foreign actors that are taking advantage of that moment and are, you know, feel like they have a free hand to do what they would like to do. It shows how quickly things could change in this world. You have to think that Europe is looking at what's going on here with considerable concern. We're going to be talking about some of the moves that it's making to kind of counter the Iranian threat in the next segment. But Iran is just so open about what its intent is. It's quite stunning in some ways.
Yeah, and this is, you know, what we've been watching for years when we talk about Iran and their provocative, offensive, pushy foreign policy. And the United States, under the leadership of President Trump, has everybody in the region rejoicing that there was somebody that would finally stand up to Iran. Mm-hmm. And the region is terrified with the prospect of President Trump leaving office. And these moves by Iran have to be seen in light of their understanding that Joe Biden is going to be president. And so perhaps they're trying to move the goalposts a bit before Biden comes in to perhaps get a better negotiating position. However, these are not bluffs from Iran.
Right.
It's not just bluster. They are pushing towards a bomb. And the hope is, and at least in terms of biblical prophecy, this might be this exposure of more of Iran's desire for a nuclear weapon that is coming out right now. It might be the mobilizing factor for European nations to finally take a more bold stance against Iran. That's, of course, what biblical prophecy says is going to happen, but it hasn't happened as yet. There was a statement that was issued by the UK, by Germany, and by France, condemning the move to enrich to 20%, calling on Iran again to go back to what it agreed to in the JCPOA. However, we haven't seen sanctions from Europe or anything like that. However, maybe this will be what it takes for Europe to then wake up a bit and start becoming more bold at standing up to Iran's aggression.
Well, this is discussed in an article that we have up at the Trumpet site right now. Iran is now enriching uranium to 20%. We appreciate that, Brent, and that leads right into our next story. While Iran is racing to this nuclear capability, Germany has been quietly working to counter the Iranian threat. For this, we'll go to Richard Palmer.
Yes, last year, Germany approved about $1.42 billion worth of weapons exports to countries that are involved in the Yemeni or Libyan civil wars. And this is something that is very controversial within Germany. And it's, you know, that there is a lot of domestic opposition to Germany selling weapons to any of these countries that are involved in any of these wars, but they continue to do so. This is something that was obviously still important to the German Chancellor, the German government. They're willing to take this unpopular decision. So a lot of that went to Egypt. This was according to the Germany's Federal Ministry of Economy in some statistics they produced. It was almost an entire billion, $923 million of weapon exports were approved for Egypt, $734 million for Qatar. And then you've got smaller amounts to the United Arab Emirates, to Kuwait, Turkey, and then also Jordan and Bahrain. So several of these Arab countries. And what is the common denominator with all of these Arab countries? Well, it ties right in with what Brent was just saying. These are countries that in general are opposed to Iran, that if you're wanting to slow or stop Iran's spread across the Middle East, these are countries that you would wanting to be working with. You know, Egypt is something that that Germany sees as a key point. They're an important, a critical country in the Middle East at the moment. They're not currently aligned with Iran. Germany would like to keep it that way. So they're spending heavily there in a similar way to the way that the United States gives a lot of military aid to Egypt. So this is something that is so important to Germany, they're willing to risk some of that domestic backlash.
Well, as I mentioned in talking with Brent, it's very interesting how you see this kind of post-American reality developing, where you have Europe and these Middle Eastern states acknowledging the reality that America, it looks like it's not going to be able to contain Iran, and Germany has been positioning itself for some time to be able to confront this threat directly. These other states very concerned and realistic about just how dangerous the threat from Iran is. When you look at the prophecy, and we go to the prophecy in Daniel 11 quite often, Gerald Fleury, our editor-in-chief, has made the point that America isn't even in that equation. It's a direct confrontation between a European power and this Iranian-led Middle Eastern power. That really is exactly what we see developing here.
Yes, we do. And I think it will develop much more quickly once Angela Merkel is out of the picture. But I think the fact that Germany is already working on building these connections, even while you have somebody who is maybe not the most confrontational or aggressive German chancellor, shows that they're getting prepared. You know, they are concerned about the future. And the other important thing I should have probably mentioned on those figures is these – Germany is also, because they know this is controversial, they're also pretty good at hiding a lot of weapons exports to some of these countries. So, for example, Rheinmetall is a big, famous German arms company. Often when dealing with some of these Middle Eastern countries, those deals will go through Rheinmetall Italia, the Italian branch, and then they don't show up in these figures that the German government produces about, well, these are the countries involved in some of these conflicts that we've been selling weapons to. So this is not the full picture. It's just this is the trade that they couldn't really find an easy way of hiding, I guess is probably the best way of putting it. But yeah, this clash that we see Germany preparing for and working at is something directly prophesied. And Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury had one of his landmark articles of the last few years is one called Watch Algeria. And he talks about Iran, and he talks about Iran in that article, especially spreading out throughout this region. You know, it's working to reach into lots of different. You know, it's already reached into Iraq. You're seeing radical Islam led by Iran. You're getting a foothold in countries like Libya. And then he writes, but Iran isn't the only one interested in Africa and some of these other countries. Germany is making strong inroads as well. Both of these powers are racing to get control of as much control of North Africa as they can. They will inevitably clash with each other. So these two countries are working to gather up allies, working at making these connections, and these arms deals are one of the key ways Germany does that. And Mr. Fleury made that forecast based on prophecies in Daniel chapter 11 that describe a clash between a king of the north and the king of the south. And you know, you can trace through the rest of that chapter who the king of the north is, and it's referring to a European power, a successor to the old Roman Empire, and the king of the south. Well, you know, what do we see? Who do we see dominating the Middle East, south of Europe, right now? While Iran is really rising up and dominating radical Islam, and you can see how once that, like we heard from Brent, you know, once the restraint from America is removed, they're going to be even more pushy, even more dominant. Playing that role. And so you can see this prophesied clash building. And our free booklet, The King of the South, as well, goes into that prophecy in a lot more detail.
Well, thank you very much for that, Richard. We also have an article up on the website right now, Germany Arms the Middle East Against Iran. This is by Josue Michels, to give you the prophetic context of what's happening there. We do appreciate that. Another arms buildup is taking place in Eastern Europe and along the borders of Russia. To learn why, we'll go to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, well, it's happening because Russia's foreign policy is growing more assertive under Vladimir Putin. The last decade especially has seen just a whole range of assertive and aggressive behaviors from Russia. We often talk about the 2008 invasion of Georgia and the way Russia brought 20% of that nation's territory under Moscow's control, and it has remained under Russian control ever since then. So that was not any kind of temporary move. And then we also often talk about what Putin did in Ukraine, taking the Crimean Peninsula and asserting control over that. There again, Russia has remained in control there, and there are no signs that that would be reversed anytime soon. And then if you look even just at the last year, there are all kinds of other instances of Russian assertiveness and aggression that are maybe not on the same scale as Georgia or Ukraine, but still very significant. There was Russia's success in propping up Belarus's dictator last year, despite a lot of opposition against him. There was his success in ending the war between Armenia and Azerbaijan in a way that actually allowed Russia to put forces in Azerbaijan for the first time. There were also numerous just huge weapons tests, especially with hypersonic missiles, and all kinds of saber rattling with military games, and deploying new missiles in Kaliningrad. That's the isolated Russian region that's wedged right there in between Poland and Lithuania. There have also been incursions by Russian warplanes into European airspace, and Russian warships in European waters as well. So Russia is back in many ways, and it is aggressive. And its neighbors in Europe are increasingly fearful of this. The Wall Street Journal wrote about this on Tuesday. They wrote, quote, "Russia's expansive military and political appetites are alarming countries along the former frontiers of the Soviet Union, from Finland to Romania." And then it goes on to mention Norway, Poland, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. These countries, you know, they know how brutal the Soviet Union was. Many of them experienced that brutality firsthand. So they're just terrified to see Russia becoming so expansionistic once again. And in many cases, that fear is prompting these European countries to boost their own military power and preparedness. There have been massive military exercises, even battle groups deployed, and significant increases in military spending. And it's easy to see why that would be the case. They see Russia stirring, and they want to be ready for whatever it might unleash.
Put this in prophetic context for us. You were talking about history, but looking at this in terms of Bible prophecy, the arming of these two groups really factors directly into what the Bible prophesies to happen in the future.
Yes, it does. And this is something that Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury has been watching and warning about for a number of years now. He's emphasized not just the military buildup by Europe in response to Russia's aggression, but also the uniting of European nations that will be kind of catalyzed by their fear of Russia. One of his articles on this topic was published in 2014. That was just after Russia's annexation of the Crimea. And Mr. Fleury put it all in the context of Bible prophecy. He pointed to passages in Daniel, which talk specifically about Europe, or which is called there the King of the North, being troubled by tidings which are from, you know, if you look at the geography here and study it, it's clear that it's troubled by tidings or news that's from Russia and from China. And then he also pointed to prophecies in the book of Revelation, especially chapters 13 and 17 there. And he writes, quote, "The fear you see in Europe because of events in Crimea is going to cause 10 leaders in Europe to unite in a sudden and dramatic way and in precise accordance with the Bible's description of that European empire. Europe's new fear of Russia is going to play a major role in hastening the fulfillment of that prophecy." So, you know, just a really important trend for us to watch, and any listeners who would like to really study the relevant prophecies so that they can watch the current events with the right understanding should, I would just encourage them to order a free copy of Mr. Fleury's booklet, The Prophesied Prince of Russia.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. We will link to that article and booklet in the show notes. for today's program. You're listening to Trumpet Hour. Coming up, we'll talk about failing efforts to contain coronavirus in Europe, China wrapping up work on its third aircraft carrier, and an overlooked victory of the Trump administration this week. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Coronavirus lockdowns in Europe don't seem to be slowing the spread of the virus. Increasing criticism of governments for the way that they're handling the crisis. To learn about this, we'll go back to Richard Palmer.
Yes, this could be a big deal in the European Union as the as time goes on in the next year, over the next few months. What stands out especially is that the European Union looks like they may well have quite dramatically mishandled the development of vaccines. And this could very quickly lead to a political backlash in a lot of countries. So one of the big vaccines going out at the moment, the Pfizer vaccine, is a German-made vaccine. And you've got this situation now where this vaccine is being rolled out much more quickly in America and in Britain than it is in Germany. That's got a lot of Germans saying, well, you know, how are we in this situation? For a lot of people, you know, the vaccine is their hope for a way out of the crisis. And I'm not, you know, endorsing the vaccine in this segment, but I am making the point that if Europe messes this up, and if European politicians mess this up, then in the eyes of a lot of voters, they will have blood on their hands. And you could see this quite quickly leading to calls for people to resign, changes in political leadership, yet another political crisis for Europe. So why is Germany behind other countries with getting out their own vaccine? Well, Angela Merkel, to be kind of a good European, submitted to letting the EU as a whole handle the vaccine rollout. And the European Union is full of a lot of bureaucracy. I think there's a lot in British government, in American government, that is not great. For Europe to be behind that shows a fairly high level of incompetence, I think, with their own government. Then you've also got a lot of various different European biases coming in. You know, for example, it looks like Europe seems to be delaying the rollout of the vaccine that was developed within the UK because they want to favor one that's being developed in France. And this is leading to further delays. There was an effort to try and get this spread out at the same speed all the way across 27 EU nations. And that meant that some of those countries that were prepared to move more quickly, like Germany, ended up waiting and doing nothing while they were waiting for other European countries to get this rollout. It's even reached the point that apparently Angela Merkel is going over to Putin and talking about getting access to the Russian vaccine. So already there's a lot of this is developing a new strain of European Euroscepticism, a dissatisfaction with the way that Brussels is being run, and a dissatisfaction with German leadership that gave Brussels control of the vaccine rollout. Then you've got the dissatisfaction as a whole with coronavirus lockdowns. I think that's coming from a different segment of the population. This segment is not necessarily enthusiastic about the vaccine. But the point I made a few weeks ago on this program was that really in Germany, there are no mainstream anti-lockdown parties. If you're against the lockdown, that's leading to people voting for some of these more extreme parties. And it's another factor in this German political crisis. So you could see how this coronavirus crisis could very easily become another aspect of this European leadership problems.
That is interesting to see the way that that's playing out, where the unwieldy nature of 27 nations in the EU and trying to do everything kind of multilaterally and as a big federal type institution is creating problems, slowing these things down that are really having an impact on average European citizens. It plays into that story that we've followed for some time of just how there is increasing pressure to pare that down into something that is more nimble and capable of action than it is currently constituted. That's certainly very prophetic, but maybe you can just couch what is happening, this dissatisfaction with a European and particularly German government in its prophetic context for us, Richard, because this is another angle that we've talked a lot about over the years, and just how you see this this push toward the fringes. You see this shift in kind of away from that more multilateral model and traditional German politics to something that's much more close to what we would expect based on prophecy.
Right, and this is something we've even talked about very specifically within context of coronavirus, or at least Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has. One of his kind of landmark articles for the year, published back in July, was called Coronavirus and the Holy Roman Empire. The whole point of that article is just showing how coronavirus is pushing Europe towards this destination that we anticipate because of Bible prophecy in a whole number of different ways. And you can see how this phase of coronavirus ties perfectly in with that. You know, you mentioned we've these prophecies of nations being, of the European Union being shrunk down into a leaner, more agile core of 10 nations. You can also see how this can lead to Europeans and Germans' desire for a strong leader. You know, how has America been able to roll the vaccine out harder or faster? A lot of that has probably got to do with there's President Trump in charge. You've got one clear, strong leader who was pushing hard to try and get the vaccine going out by the end of 2020, trying to get this out quickly. And you can see Europeans do not admire President Donald Trump. They're very anti-Trump in general, but you can see how they would like their own kind of leader that would do that, that is willing to step up, take charge, cut through normal chains of command or normal red tape and bureaucracy, and get things moving. And so Mr. Flurry's whole point in that piece is you can see the coronavirus. He focused a lot on the economic crisis in all of these different ways. It is pushing Europe towards this prophetic destination because, you know, the Bible tells us there is coming a radical change within the European Union. We've got this kind of 27 unwieldy coalition of nations. The Bible prophesies a 10-nation group under a strong leader, and it talks about it in Revelation chapter 17 being ruled by kings, being this war-making machine. You know, it's not an unwieldy bureaucracy anymore. There are still aspects, I guess, of that, but it's under strong leaders that are not Democrats, they're dictators. Well, how do we get this big change in Europe? How do we get from where Europe is today to where this is heading? And want something that Mr. Flurry and Mr. Armstrong before have said, and again, there's Bible prophecies that indicate this, is it's going to take a crisis to bring about that metamorphosis. And coronavirus could play a big role in that crisis. You know, you look at the economic side of this, the massive debt, the money printing the European Central Bank is doing. It's building itself up for a crisis there. And then you see all these other ways that coronavirus is helping to build up to a political crisis. And so that article, Coronavirus and the Holy Roman Empire, from over the summer, is a great place to go to see where this is pushing Europe.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for that. We also have our article up on the website right now, Coronavirus Affecting German Leadership Crisis. Go check that out. We'll link to both of those in the show notes. Thank you, Richard. Over to China now, where it's about to complete construction on its third aircraft carrier. For this, we'll go back to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, the South China Morning Post reported this week that China's third aircraft carrier is in the final stages of construction, and it's set to be finished up in the first half of this year. So China's first aircraft carrier was fairly primitive. It was rebuilt on a gutted Soviet-era carrier that the Chinese had bought from Ukraine in the late 90s. And that one uses ramps to help planes take off. So that's not optimal with larger planes. But that first Chinese carrier was launched in 2012. And then China's second carrier was launched in 2017. And the second one was a step up from the first, but it was still based on that old Soviet design and still used ramps for takeoff. But this third one is an entirely new class. It's far larger than the Liaoning or the Shandong. Those are the names of the first and second carriers. And instead of a ramp, this third one uses a far more advanced electromagnetic catapult system to launch planes. So this means larger and heavier planes can get airborne. It also means the planes use quite a lot less fuel during takeoff. So that means they can then fly longer missions. That's what most U.S. aircraft carriers use. And actually, America's older carriers use steam-fueled catapults. It's only our newest Ford-class carriers that even have catapults that are electromagnetic. So that shows, I think, just how advanced this new Chinese aircraft carrier is. It really looks like they've skipped some big steps between their first two and this latest one. And now this one is just months away from being finished up.
So for China to have a weapon of this power, what does that do for China? As we've been seeing, it's demonstrating its ambitions on the seas, in ports, strategic waterways. An aircraft carrier like this, what does it mean?
Yes, as you said, we've seen China really take over the South China Sea lately, building artificial islands there, militarizing those islands. It's also built up its naval might at the same time by just an incredible degree. China now has more naval vessels than any other country, including the U.S. And then with that expanded presence in the South China Sea and with the increased number of warships, China has been asserting its will far from its borders. It's taken over the Scarborough Shoal in the Philippines. It's kicked Vietnam and Indonesia and other countries out of their waters so that China can be the only one drilling for oil or fishing or those kinds of things. So China has not just been amassing all of this power, but really putting it to use in some, what I think are some alarming ways. And with these aircraft carriers, and especially this latest, more advanced one, we can expect that same kind of Chinese behavior to be happening farther and farther away from Beijing. We can expect China to deploy carrier groups eventually anywhere in the world, and just be able to bully other nations and assert its will and just, further its goal of becoming a global superpower. Aircraft carriers were a major part of America's dominance of the world over the last seven decades or so, and China has learned from that and is channeling lots of cash and resources into building carriers in basically a drive to supplant the U.S. and to become the new dominant global power.
And prophetically speaking, how does this factor into future events?
Richard just mentioned a landmark article that Mr. Fleury wrote over the summer, and he wrote another landmark article in August called Where is the China-America Clash Leading? So just a month after that other one, I believe. And in this one, he focuses mostly on what we're just discussing here, China's increasing naval power and its takeover of the South China Sea. And he examines it all through the lens of Bible prophecy. He especially focuses on a prophecy in Deuteronomy 28 about the United States losing control of the shipping lanes and maritime choke points that it once had control over. And he talks about the U.S. losing them mainly to China. He's really emphasizing China throughout there. So with China's Navy becoming so powerful and set to launch now yet another aircraft carrier that's far more powerful than the first two, we see this already in the early stages of fulfillment, because it was America that kept that sea open to free trade pretty much since the end of World War II. But now China is becoming more and more in control of that area. And Mr. Fleury's article shows that this shifting power balance is fulfilling that prophecy in the book of Deuteronomy. So it's just a very important article to read as we see China's naval power continuing to expand.
Where is the China-America clash leading? We will link to that in the show notes. And also, please do check out our February 2021 Trumpet Edition, a special edition about the threat that China poses in the world today. We thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. One final story on the program today. While the American press piles on Donald Trump for supposedly leading an attempted insurrection, they overlook a victory his administration scored this week. Another Muslim nation officially added to the signatories of the Abraham Accords. To learn about this, we'll go back to Brent Noctegal.
Yes, this is probably something you haven't heard about this week, but this was a victory for the U.S. administration of President Trump and also the state of Israel and also the nation, the African nation of Sudan. This Muslim majority country signed on Wednesday onto the Abraham Accords. These are agreements between Arab states and the state of Israel. The UAE was the first to sign on, then Bahrain. Morocco was a couple of weeks ago, and now Sudan has joined the agreement also. This means, again, that Israel and Sudan will start treating each other as normal nations, start trading with each other, start normalizing ties in terms of foreign relations and diplomatic missions to each of the countries as well. This was meant to be signed at the White House, but events have overtaken this and overshadowed this, and so it was signed by the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin in Khartoum alongside the Justice Minister. And what's interesting about this is, of course, this is a great victory for the state of Israel. However, it just underscores how much it is the Trump administration that is pushing these deals on the behalf of Israel. There was no Israeli actually present for this deal. There was the foreign minister, Gabi Ashkenazi. He tweeted out that this was an important step in advancing regional normalization agreements in the Middle East. However, it's really kind of interesting, and you saw this with Morocco as well, that Israel wasn't even brought in to the concept of Morocco signing the deal till 6 weeks before it was signed. And so these are a massive peace deals that all the legwork that is being done to produce such an arrangement and give Israel or open Israel up to the region, or at least the region to Israel, it is all done by the Trump administration, by his son-in-law Jared Kushner and his team, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and even Mnuchin as well. Why was he there? Well, he's obviously a President Trump loyalist, but he's also helping out Sudan get off the state sponsor of terrorism list, meaning their economy is going to be opened up for foreign investment. The United States is also providing a $1 billion loan to Sudan to help them get in the good books with the World Bank as well. And so the U.S. is putting a lot on the table here for the sake of its ally in the Middle East.
Looking at this prophetically, what stands out to you as being significant about this latest agreement or addition to those Abraham Accords?
Well, Sudan is quite different in terms of biblical prophecy goes, and even the makeup. It's a heavily populated country, lots of Muslims there. It's a very low-income country compared with Bahrain and the UAE and even Morocco. And so this is a peace deal that Sudan is signing up to for a lot of self-interest. Like, everyone signs up for self-interest, of course, but in Sudan's case, the government there it's been extremely difficult to get any type of foreign investment in the country and help them get out of poverty because of the designation of the United States that they are state sponsors of terror. So this Sudan, while the former leader that worked with the Muslim Brotherhood and actively encouraged the Muslim Brotherhood is gone, and there's a temporary government in power, Sudan is one of the countries where the population itself is vehemently anti-Israeli and anti-Jewish, which then you have to think of the longevity of such an agreement. While this is going to provide Sudan and perhaps Israel as well with benefits, and it's going to encourage other Muslim states to sign on with Sudan, we probably don't expect a long-term peace to work out with Israel. Of course, a lot of these countries that are signing up with Israel, the Bible prophesies, eventually are going to become Israel's enemies. Sudan probably doesn't fit that list. However, all the other countries so far, or at least let's say the Gulf countries that have signed onto this, they do fit that the biblical prophecies that show that they are going to align against Israel. There's one other just small announcement this week. Well, not that small, and that's the, one of these Gulf countries, Qatar, that didn't have a relationship for the past 3.5 years with Saudi Arabia, with the UAE. They actually came back together, and there was meetings with the GCC, and now Qatar is back in the fold, which is incredibly interesting because Qatar is a country that it has ties to Iran, has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet the head of the GCC, de facto head, the head of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, he has been actively working to bring Qatar back into the fold. And so we could see more Gulf countries, and this was done with pressure from the United States, actually sign on to the Abraham Accords as well. So for the meantime, these are great foreign policy achievements for the Trump administration and also for the state of Israel. But biblical prophecy indicates that in the long run, it's these very nations that are signing these deals that are going to be the ones that betray the state of Israel.
Well, thank you very much for that, Brent. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. Email us your thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our panel, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal. And thanks to Jeremiah for engineering and production. I'll leave you with these words of Thomas Paine. The real man smiles in trouble, gathers strength from distress, and grows brave by reflection. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.